On this week's 51%, a woman's experience at a motorcycle repair shop prompts her partner to weigh in on women riders. We hear from the first black female police officer in a certain northeastern city, and Boy Scouts start letting in girls.
We didn't have to change anything in our program to make it accessible to girls.
I'm Allison Dunn, and this is 51%.
Psycho mama, won't you lay your big spike down?
It has been a harsh winter in the Northeast and in other parts. On the few days when I can feel the warmth of the sun, on the few days there is sun, I'm immediately transported to spring. And on one of those amazing spring weekend days, motorcycle sounds abound. So here's a bit of the storied history of women motorcyclists sparked by an encounter with a tire mechanic.
Motor maids and bubblegum. Today was one of those rare rides that is, sadly, necessary, efficient, and entirely unnoteworthy. In order to get back on time to the upper Midwest, we hauled from Cooperstown, New York to Cleveland between two remarkable halls of American fame, baseball and rock and roll, respectively. There's a different state of mind that settles in on those long interstate rides compared to the mountain, desert, or plains, blue line highways, though. On the latter, a creative cast comes over your thoughts. In fact, I read an article recently, but forgot to commit its particular title to mental bibliography, with apologies to the author. Speaking of the elements that nurture creativity, they included surrounding yourself with the colors of nature, being in open spaces, having time to think and reflect, and others that are naturally part of the cross-country riding experience. You can remember dreams more clearly, write songs and stories, even revisit conversations and memories with clarity in this frame of mind. On the interstate, especially in an urban passage, with the dangers of high-speed traffic all around, thoughts become much more immediate, analytical, and focused. In both environments and frames of mind, Tony, my lovely and talented partner in life and on the road, there's less difference between those two as time goes by, is their flying wing in my right-hand mirror. We've ridden so many thousands of miles together by now that it's become something of a dance. She knows how I read traffic and road hazards, anticipates and moves with me in an unspoken rhythm that mirrors how we've lived life on legs as well. There's no one with whom I'd rather ride or whom I trust more. Which led my analytical interstate thoughts to my reaction over her recent encounter with a motorcycle mechanic in Connecticut. I get the boys' club concept when it comes to motorcycle clubs. Most of the clubs were formed in two waves, either after World War II or the Vietnam War, by men returning from those wars and alienated by the culture to which they were expected to return. Only their brothers in arms understood their experiences and their needs for that vital fraternal camaraderie to put it all in order without the judgments and expectations of civilian society. The traditional rules for the clubs were written from that fraternal perspective. I respect that. The freedom to be discriminating in our associations may not please today's politically correct commentators, but it remains one of the essential liberties nonetheless. I likewise have the freedom to associate with them or not based on those same rules, which is why I respectfully declined an offer to join an MC that would have required my partner to join in an auxiliary role and ride behind the men, some of whom don't ride as much in a year as she does in a week. It's entirely another thing, however, to let ignorant paternalistic judgments justify belittling the earned respect and accomplishments of women riders, as Tony experienced with this tire mechanic. Of course, she didn't give a rodent's posterior for his opinion one way or the other, blowing bubbles with her gum in the service area and her pigtails askew from the wind, but intentional ignorance is the worst kind. And his is keeping this fellow from realizing some of the richest parts of riding history. In 1916, sisters Augusta and Adeline Van Buren, hoping to earn posts as dispatch riders during World War I, became the first women to ride motorcycles coast to coast across North America. Starting in Brooklyn, New York, on Indian Power Plus motorcycles, they rode to Colorado Springs, Colorado, where they became the first women to summit Pikes Peak on any kind of motorized vehicle. They finished their two-month, 3,300-mile trip in Los Angeles, California on September 8, 1916, wrenching, riding, and rebuilding their bikes themselves along the way in a time when there were few paved roads and no interstates. Their applications as post riders were rejected. At 19 years old, Bessie Stringfield, riding a 1928 Indian Scout, tossed a penny over a map to see where it landed. This method led her to riding solo through the entire lower 48 states, with all the dangers of being black, female, and on a bike alone at that time. In World War II, she became the first female civilian motorcycle dispatch rider, riding her own blue Harley and carrying classified documents between U.S. Army military bases. Stringfield went on to found the Iron Horse Motorcycle Club and won a flat track race disguised as a man, afterward being denied the trophy when she removed her helmet. Gloria Struck was born behind a motorcycle shop in Clifton, New Jersey in 1925 and started riding her first Indian Scout as a teenager in 1941. She joined the Motor Maids, one of America's first motorcycle clubs for women, in 1946, and took her first road trip to Daytona to watch the beach races there in 1951. In 2015, at the age of 90, she rode her 2004 Harley Heritage Softail Classic the 1,700 miles from home to the 75th annual Sturgis Motorcycle Rally and back. The bike is her 12th, and has 49,000 miles on it. She probably has a few more to go, and will be passing more than a few fellas trailering their spotless 1,500-mile Ultra CVOs behind their air-conditioned SUVs. My boisterous, colorful bride is in fine company among those ladies, putting more miles on her own blue suede 08 Heritage Softail in a summer than many tire mechanics and weekend townies will ride in a lifetime. This is the girl who, with a broken collarbone, laying against the concrete barrier after making unfortunate acquaintance with highway gravel on a mountain turn in Colorado, checked to make sure her tattoos were intact and asked the paramedic how long before she could ride again. Popping her gum and sometimes losing it to the wind at 80, purple scarf tattering behind her, there is no one I'd rather see next to me on the road, smiling and chasing the sun. So fellas, ride with who you want, but respect those who have earned it. And ladies, you go, girl.
That was Scott Burns in a piece produced by Love in America. Izena Lytell is the first black female police officer for Pittsfield, a Massachusetts city in Berkshire County. She spoke with 51%'s Josh Landes about her new position, and she's another example of the importance of role models.
I've always wanted to be a police officer since I was little, and I just never saw any officers that looked like me. So I just kind of wanted to be that person that maybe someone else that looks like me will look at, and like I've said, I didn't come from a lot. Like, my mother raised 10 children by herself, and we didn't have a lot, but she always made sure that we were taken care of. So this is like a long dream that I've had. My family has gone through a lot, especially since my mother passed away, but as much as I wanted to just give up, I couldn't. So I didn't just do this for myself. I did this for my family, for my support system, for my three children, for my amazing fiance. I did it for my community. so that maybe just someone that didn't come from a lot like me will believe in theirself enough to just keep pushing forward.
What can you bring to the police department from that experience that maybe you, you know, is something you could bring that hasn't been there before? Like, what is that X factor?
I really think it's my presence. I mean, I understand what I've done is something historic, but I never wanted the praise or anything like that. I just want to be out in the community and want other young minorities to just see what they can become. That's what I want to do. I never wanted praise. I never wanted to be in the newspaper or anything like that. I try to lead a very quiet life. So a lot of this is new to me right now. Like I said, I understand what I've done is very historic, but I'm just trying to inspire someone else to do the same.
What challenges do you foresee as you step into this role?
Honestly, I'm kind of nervous about the way the community will receive me. I don't want to be different, but I know I'm different from a lot of people on the force race-wise, but I don't really know what to expect. I'm just going to take it however it comes and just stay positive. I've always stayed positive through this whole process.
In the spirit of that positivity, what is your greatest hope for what your presence on the force can offer to Pittsfield?
I just hope that there are more minorities that take the civil service exam, that apply for these jobs. Like, there's not too many minorities on the department, but like I said before, I feel that the department is going in the right direction, trying to get more people. I just hope that people will see it and just apply. Go take the civil service exam. It's $100 and it can change your life because it's changed mine.
So what's your experience been like as a woman in both the police academy and in the department so far?
Well, the department is amazing. They're awesome. Everyone has been supportive this whole time. Like I said, through my first academy coming home, and through the second academy, everyone's just been very great, very supportive.
So we're very lucky today to actually have in the room, I believe, someone who was very instrumental in setting you on this path to where you are today. I want to know if you could tell us who's with us and the impact that she had on your life.
Detective Bertelli is with us. She is by far one of the most amazing women, female officers that I've ever met in my life. She knew my whole family, and she was my DARE officer. I just always thought she was the coolest officer just because she was a woman, and I didn't really see that growing up. She's kind-hearted. She's nice. She's just all around a great officer. She did DARE when we did community stuff where we lived in the Wilson Project. She would come out there and she would do arts and crafts and the community room with us. She really made it a point to get to know us growing up. Like I said, she knows my whole family. She knew my mother. So I don't know, I just always thought she was a great police officer. And one of the reasons why I definitely got into it, because she's someone that I saw probably at least on a weekly basis growing up there. So she made it a point to get out in the community, and I believe that she hasn't just impacted my life. I think she impacted a lot of young children's lives, especially the ones that lived in those kind of projects.
Detective Bertelli Hunt, what's it like seeing someone that you educated so many years ago following in your footsteps?
Oh, it's amazing. There's a lot of officers on the police department that I've had as a DARE officer or as a school resource officer, just being out in the community that I know. So I am kind of aging myself, but it's just fantastic that I can inspire people to become police officers.
And what kind of advice can you give the new officer about what it's like to be a woman in the police department?
I would just say go there, be yourself, and do the best job that you can be.
When did you join the Pittsfield Police Department?
Back in 1983.
And what kind of department was it like then?
I was one of the... I wasn't one of the first females, but myself and two other female officers came on at the same time, so we kind of had a support system there to help each other through the academy, and there was a big scandal in the police department with one of the first female officers, so it was kind of tough coming on. Now there's three new female officers, and how are people going to react to us? But we were well received.
And today, what's the general breakdown like at the police department? How many women work there?
Boy, I think there's like 10 or 11.
Stacked against what? How many total?
I think there's like 65. From when I started, it's great that we have so many female officers.
When you're out there on the beat and you're out there protecting Pittsfield and serving its constituents, do you often run into people who treat you differently because you're a woman while you're actually out, you know, doing the job?
Well, it depends on the situation and the circumstances. I've been on calls where they're happy to see me, and I've been on calls where they're not happy to see me. But I think people pretty much treat you fairly, whether you're a female or a male.
That was Detective Kim Bertelli Hunt at the end, along with Izina Lytell, the first Black female police officer for Pittsfield, Massachusetts. They were speaking with 51%'s Josh Landes. Recently, a local Boy Scouts of America organization in upstate New York for the first time opened up scouting to girls at the Cub Scout level. It's the Twin Rivers Council, which includes scout groups from the Canadian border to the Capital Region. The move follows an announcement at the national level last fall that girls would be welcome in Boy Scouts. To help explain how the so-called Family Scouting Program is launching, 51%'s Lucas Willard spoke with Twin Rivers Council Assistant Scout Executive Dennis Dugan.
Early last spring, the National Council asked all of the councils in the United States to survey their leadership about the potential of girls joining scouting. Over the course of the summer, surveys were done, they were sent to national, and then at the national meeting in September, Michael Serbaugh, the chief scout executive, announced that we would be implementing the family scouting program in the beginning of the year 2018. Councils were given the choice to become an early adopter of the program, and by being an early adopter, they would be ready by March 1st to invite girls to join scouting. Each of the units that wanted to participate in 2018 would be a Cub Scout pack, and the plan is to roll out scouting for Boy Scouts, which the irony there, but the Boy Scout troops could accept girls in 2019. We are in the process in Twin Rivers Council. We have 392 traditional units, Boy Scouts and Cub Scouts. We have asked and targeted 30 units this spring to invite girls to be in their program. What happens is that each of the dens of 6 to 8 youth would be single-sex dens, so that you have a boy den and a girl den in Cub Scouts. They're getting the same program, but now a boy can be a Wolf Scout and his little sister, who may be a year younger, would be a Tiger Scout in the same pack with them. They get to participate in all the activities together, in that when they have a pack Pinewood Derby race, for example, or if they come to a council Cub Scout activity, both the boys and the girls come, they do the same activities. They are working on the same achievements. We didn't have to change anything in our program to make it accessible to girls.
Okay, so I just sort of want to back up in the way that it's structured. Just for people who aren't familiar, you have the council and the regional councils. Then you have the troops or the packs. Boy Scouts have troops, Cub Scouts have packs. And in those, say, Cub Scout packs, you have the dens. And so basically, we would be creating new dens that would be for girls.
Correct.
Is there a potential in the future to have a co-ed den? Or right. Is it right now it's separate?
Right now, the plan is to keep them gender separate, in that we understand that boys and girls do learn at different paces and in different ways. And the hope is that as we go through the process and we learn what works and doesn't work, we can look forward in the future and see if we have to tweak that.
And at the Boy Scout level in 2019, would troops be co-ed, and would it be separate, you know, a male patrol or a female patrol?
The patrols, again, would be much like in Cub Scouts, that right now, which is why they haven't rolled it out yet, right now the plan is that Boy Scouting will be modeled on what we do in Exploring and Venturing, in that that will not be separate patrols per se, but that girls who join when boys join, they would become a patrol, and you would have a male and a female leader in the room working with them at the same time.
So how is the program at the Boy Scout level different from the Venturing program? And maybe if you could explain a little bit about what Venture Scouts is, versus typical Boy Scouts when people think of a Boy Scout.
The Venturing program, they have an advancement program, but it's not designed about merit badges. It's more designed on activities that you would do in high adventure that, for example, if boys and girls come together and they decide that they would like to go on a super adventure and go whitewater rafting in the Adirondack Mountains, they would learn how to fundraise and how to use the rafts and learn all the safety techniques and then go do their super activity. Whereas in Boy Scouts, we have specific merit badges, 118 at this time, that boys and girls can work towards anything from railroading to collections to playing chess, including 12 merit badges that they have to earn for Eagles. So it's more of an advancement structured piece in the Boy Scouts, whereas Venturing is cool activities that they can do as they grow older.
So how does Twin Rivers see the opportunity to, in introducing family scouting and then eventually allowing co-ed Boy Scouting, is this going to boost enthusiasm? Are we hoping that more people would become interested in scouting because of the new co-ed programs?
It is that, and it also is something that our volunteers, when they responded to the survey, most families now have one or two children. So the opportunity to bring both children to a singular program and have them participate together has great appeal to the parents, that they no longer have to drop Johnny off in one place and their daughter off at another event, that they can both be participating at their level at the same thing and have something in common.
How does Twin Rivers Council compare maybe regionally or nationally when it comes to numbers over the years? Is interest up? Is it down? What are the trends?
Actually, the best part for Twin Rivers is even before the announcement was made, in the last 2 years, the Twin Rivers Council has shown membership growth across all their programs, from Cub Scouting to Boy Scouting to Venturing to Exploring. One of the things that we've seen is that young people are looking for opportunities to be able to show leadership, and or they're in a school program that requires them to do community service, and the Boy Scouts have been doing that for over 108 years.
That was Twin Rivers Council Assistant Scout Executive Dennis Dugan. He says PACs have begun recruiting girls. He was speaking with 51%'s Lucas Willard. Then Chief of Staff for former First Lady Michelle Obama will head the Recording Academy's new task force focused on inclusion and diversity. The Academy recently announced that Tina Chen, a veteran lawyer who is also working on the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund, will chair the new initiative. The Grammys announced the task force after its CEO drew criticism for saying women need to step up about the lack of female winners. This comment was backstage at the Grammys' 60th award show held in January. The task force plans to uncover biases and other barriers that impede women's success in the music industry. Chen says in a statement, "It's an important initial step by the Recording Academy to demonstrate its commitment to tackling these challenges in a comprehensive way." And that's our show for this week. Thanks to Patrick Garrett for production assistance. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. Our theme music is Glow in the Dark by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. If you'd like to hear this show again, sign up for our podcast or visit the 51% archives on our website at wamc.org. This week's show is number 1495.